But I guess we're not going to have those. I'll be reading from Exodus chapter 20, verses 18 through 21. I urge you, if you get a chance to listen to it in a dramatized version, I know I'm always pushing that, and I'm going to push it again. Listen to the dramatized versions. It really adds a lot of emphasis. Exodus chapter 20, 18 through 21. All the people witnessed the thunder and lightning, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain surrounded by smoke. When the people saw it, they trembled and stood at a distance. "You speak to us, and we will listen," they said to Moses. "But don't let God speak to us, or we will die." Moses responded to the people, "Don't be afraid. For God has come to test you so that you will fear him and will not sin." And the people remained standing at a distance, and Moses approached the total darkness where God was.
I just let you keep reading.
Good morning. Before we begin this morning, let me just remind you of a few things. First of all, remember Richard and Lori. They are in Cameroon on the ground. We got an email from them Friday. I assume they got there Thursday at some point. But keep them in your prayers as they work in Cameroon with Jim Corner and the rest of their team there. And we also have, while they're away, we have a lot of stuff coming up, so remember these things. For you guys, our teenagers, remember the Boise Youth Rally. That's coming up this weekend, starting this Friday. For those of you who were at camp maybe 3 years ago, Charlie DeLong, if you remember Charlie, Charlie's going to be the speaker at the Boise Rally this weekend, so be there. Go to that. For our men, our men's retreat is coming up at the end of March, the last weekend in March. It's the last weekend of spring break, so go do your spring break thing, then come home and come to our men's retreat at Trinity Pines is where we'll be. Our speaker is Melvin Ote. You can't read it, but there's part of his bio. His bio is ridiculous. I mean, the man is incredibly accomplished. Men, you need to be at this. This will be uplifting. This will be encouraging. I'm very excited to have Brother Ote here with us. He'll also be speaking Sunday for us. Then, back to our young people, we have LTC coming up in April, a study of all kinds of different ways to approach worship, looking through the lens of some of the Psalms. Our theme, obviously, is rescued. A lot of young people, a lot of parents involved in that. Be involved in that. You guys, if you're not involved in that yet, figure out a way you can get involved. They'll let you at this point. And then, again, for our teens, man. Coming up in May, I believe this is the first weekend in May, is our youth rally, Alive 2020. You guys, again, go to this. Go to these things. Men, go to the men's retreat. Listen to me giving orders up here. How do you react when people give you orders? When people give you commands? Well, it depends on who's giving them, doesn't it? Depends on who it is, right? If you're a military person, you get commands, your response is yes, sir. May not like it, but it's yes, sir, right? Maybe it's a boss. Maybe it's a boss who gets in your face and you're like, okay, I'll do what I have to say, but get that thing out of my face. I mean, it depends on how the command is given. It depends on how the order is given, on how we react. Maybe it's a friend. It just wants to give you some advice. Sometimes our response is, you're not my boss, get out of my face. But sometimes it's, okay, I'll listen. If it's a sibling that gives you orders, sometimes it's, you might punch him in the neck or something. I don't know. It just, again, it depends on who gives the order and how the order is given. If you're a parent, you've probably been in a situation where you're having to give orders like this. And you sometimes might get that vacant stare, or if you've got a pair of kids that you're trying to give orders, you get the look from one of them that says, I believe she's talking to you. I believe it's speaking to one of us, and I'm pretty sure it's you. It depends on how the order is given. That depends, that's what determines in many cases how we react. Our question for us this morning, as we look through this text in Exodus chapter 20, is how do we respond? We're going to look at this scene in Exodus chapter 20, very familiar scene, but we're not going to really look at the familiar part of it, per se. We're all basically familiar. I would risk saying we're all familiar with the concept, at least, of the giving of the Ten Commandments. We know the people were gathered around the mountain, Mount Sinai, and we know the incredible scene there as God gave these Ten Commandments to Moses. But sometimes when we look at that incredible scene there, we get to about verse 18, about verse 17, and we end with "do not covet," and we stop there. What happened next? What happens when the people finally get all of their instructions? And see, what we have to realize too is that God didn't just drive by. God didn't just throw leaflets out and go, here's the Ten Commandments, see you. God made His presence known. There was thunder, there was lightning, there was the sound of trumpets, there was all kinds of things that caused the people to realize this is, in fact, God speaking to us. And remember, when we consider their response, we have to think, If I'm in that situation, how would I respond? How would you respond? Knowing that this is God speaking. And remember, what we will see is that their response was not, well, now we need to obey these commands. So God will get us out of Egypt. Because they're already out of Egypt, right? They're already out of that. See, God had already decided by His sovereign will, by His power, to take them. He'd heard their cry. He'd heard their cry in Egypt, and He has already delivered them. So what we see is deliverance followed by expectations. Remember that. We'll come back to that idea. But the people's reaction isn't, okay, now we better follow all these so God will take care of them. Their response that we'll see is twofold. And it's really the same response that we ought to have. So you have 2 points this morning. Fear and worship. But what I want us to see as we look through this morning is that when we look at this idea of fear, it's not just any fear. And when we look at the idea of worship, when we look at the idea of worshiping God, bringing our worship to God, it's also not just any kind of worship. So as we look at this scene, keep those two ideas in mind. And what we see right off the bat, as we ask ourselves this question, how would I respond? Let me just tell you right now, you're asked to respond all the time. Because we don't see this. We don't see this type of scene with God, but we all understand God has given us commands. God has given us instructions. So our question is, how do we respond? And I believe what we see with the nation of Israel in this setting is their first response is fear. Now you have to think. What they're seeing is very unusual. They're seeing the top of a mountain encased, enclosed in smoke and lightning and fire and thunder and noises. And their senses are completely engaged. They're seeing it. They're hearing it. They're even feeling it from the smoke and whatever's in the air. I mean, this is a complete experience. What this is a theophany. That's the fancy word for it. It's God appearing. It's God showing Himself to the people. He's leaving no doubt who's giving these instructions. There's no one in this crowd going, I wonder if this is just a storm. I mean, there's no question. This is not normal. This is God letting the people know that He is speaking to them. And we see the mountain itself is quaking. The mountain is shaking, and so are the people. What we actually see from the people is three different types of response here. As we see their emotional response, they're afraid. There's a physical response that they're actually trembling. They're shaking. But there's a spatial response too. They have made sure there's a distance. They've been warned. But now they're even backing up further away. You ever see a crowd do that? I mean, it's one of those things that we do that as humans. You see it in movies all the time. Like, you got the movie where the meteor comes from outer space and it crashes into the ground and makes a huge pit, you know, and all the people kind of go up to it and people are looking in to see what the thing is, and then the giant space lizard comes out and everybody backs away. I mean, that's how we are. We kind of want to see what the big event is, and then when we see it, it's like, that's what the people do here. They've been warned to stay back, and they see this thing, and then all of this happens, and the people draw back further. People say, I don't want anything to do with this. This is not okay. This is not a place I need to be. And it's interesting when you think about where these people are right now, as they're standing far off, they've moved back. And remember that idea too, that they're standing far away. But as this all begins to happen, you have to realize they haven't had a chance to break these Ten Commandments yet. Just as a side note, imagine this God that you're standing before, knowing you've broken every one of His commands. When we think about the fear of God, that's the God that we fear. When these people are at the initial giving of the commands and they're backing up because it's so frightening to be that close to the giver of law, imagine knowing that you've broken them all. And that's the God you stand before. Keep that in mind. Now, what we see, and this is kind of a cliche, kind of an expression we use. What we see in this idea, this fear of God, is that the way we can describe it is that God is not to be trifled with. That's an interesting expression. In fact, as I was looking for some examples and some other texts or some other ideas with this text, I saw this expression more than one place. God is not to be trifled with. It's like, well, do we use that expression? How do you describe something that is not to be trifled with? Well, what it means is it's not something to be toyed around with. This isn't something you take lightly. It's not something you play around with. You don't just go, wow, look, that's interesting. I'd love to be involved with that. It means you take it with careful consideration. How many of you remember this? 1974, right here in Idaho. Just down the road in Twin Falls. People in my generation, we remember this. I was 5 years old. I don't remember the event. I remember the aftermath. Evel Knievel, great stuntman, in a bizarre era where stuntmen were cool, was going to take this, and they called it a rocket cycle. Looks like a rocket, period, to me. But anyway, he's going to fly over, right here, fly over the Snake River Canyon down by Twin. This was the coolest. When you don't think I had one of these, you're fooling yourself. This thing, you people my age, remember you crank the thing up, then you hit the button and it goes and wipes out about 4 feet. But it was cool. And everybody wanted to do, I mean, this is what me and my buddies lived for a long time. TV, the 70s TV shows got all into this idea. You might remember this from my era. You know who this is? The great stuntman from TV, Arthur Fonzarelli from Happy Days. There was even an episode of Happy Days where Fonzie's going to jump a bunch of trash cans. Later in this series history, he decides he's going to jump sharks. This is where you get the expression jumping the shark. You know, when a business does some sort of gimmick, it comes from this, as sad as that is. But we all wanted to do that. We all thought that was so cool. And I remember thinking as a kid, I want to jump stuff, just like Evel Knievel jumped that Snake River Canyon, because that's cool. I jumped my dad's truck. I hope my parents don't watch this, because I'll get in trouble for this. I made a ramp and jumped the back of my dad's truck and wiped out my yard. But what we would do in Oklahoma, where I live, we would go to the strip pits. There's these places where coal mining in the 30s, 40s, and 50s was a big deal in northeastern Oklahoma, but they'd just dig out trenches and pull out surface coal is what they called it. And these pits were anywhere 10, 15 feet deep to sometimes 50 feet deep. The ones that weren't very wide, we would make ramps and we'd try and jump over them. Like the Snake River Canyon, you know, it's like from here to there, but it was cool. Then other things we'd do is we'd get on the edge of one if it was deep enough, and we'd ride down the side and put a ramp at the bottom and then jump the creek or the dry creek that's supposed to be there. In Oklahoma, they dry up. But we were jumping stuff because we were like Evel Knievel. This is what we saw. You know, we're seeing ourselves on the edge of this precipice on our BMX bikes. And when I say that thing, you know, $37.99 Huffy. But we're going to jump. We're going to do what Evel Knievel did, when in fact, it's really pretty much this. But that's not what we thought. We were jumping the Snake River Canyon. Because we wanted to be cool like that. And it was like, he did it. You know, and then we see Fonzie jump over trash cans. Everybody can do this. That's what we wanted to do because it was cool. And we could do it. We got bicycles. 2006, I believe it was August 15th, maybe 16th, we moved to Idaho. And we stayed all night the night before we came into Meridian. We stayed in Twin Falls. And I got my first look with my own two eyes at the Snake River Canyon. See, it's very different than I imagined. When I was riding my bike down this dry creek bed to jump a ramp that I built in my garage, I imagined I was Evel Knievel jumping the Snake River Canyon. But when I saw it for the first time, I thought, this is not a thing to be trifled with. It's very different than my imagination. It's very different than what I thought was so easy and so cool and something that I could fabricate for myself. See, that's what our fear of God is. We can't imagine God into something we want him to be. God is not to be played with. God is not to be fooled with. God is not to be taken lightly. God is not something we play around with. God says, I am different than you. You can't imagine what I am. You can't imagine who I am except for what I share with you. Look at what the Israelites say here in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 19. This is what Dan read for us just a minute ago. With what they tell Moses, you speak to us and we'll listen, they said to Moses. But don't let God speak to us or we'll die. They've been warned that several times. In chapter 19, in four different places, they're told, don't get too close. They have to understand that God is not what they want him to be. God is who he is. And God is not to be toyed with. Our culture is full of spiritual people. Our culture is full of people who want to have kind of a friendship with God, who want God to be there for them when times are tough, want God to be there to solve their problems, want God to be their buddy that will kind of see them through. That's not who God is. That's not the way God works. Our culture has a casualness about it, which can be good. I mean, and I'm not talking about our approach to God. I'm not talking about our attire. I'm not talking about the acts of worship necessarily even. I'm talking about the way we view God. And in this, in the way our culture views authority, we tend to be a little bit flippant with authority. In schools, in homes. I've heard kids call their parents by their first name. That's just odd to me. We want to be friends with the authority. We want to have that buddy-buddy relationship. And listen, I understand there's some leveling in that casualness that may be good, even in our practice of our faith. You think about attire, some of the casualness that we've accepted in our attire has really been helpful. Where you don't see the class differences as much as maybe in times past. If you have little kids, it's much easier to put your kid in regular clothes and try and put a tie on a six-month-old. I mean, that's crazy. You think about even the language of Scripture, where, you know, in our history, there was this formality of how the Bible is supposed to be read. Now it's available for everybody. But one of the drawbacks of that informality, of that leveling, is that sometimes I think we forget the magnitude of God. That we tend to forget the largesse of God, the supremacy of God. I think sometimes when we think about who God is, that we sometimes try and be a little bit too acquainted with God. Now, don't hear me wrong with this. But what we're talking about, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute, but what we're talking about is this idea of fearing God. When we think about what this says in verse 20, Moses responded to the people. They've just said, don't let God speak to us or we're going to die. Here's what Moses tells them. And this is really our focus this morning. Chapter 20, verse 20. The Lord told Moses, this is what you were to say to the Israelites. No, I'm sorry, verse 20. Moses responded to the people, don't be afraid, for God has come to test you so that you will fear him and not sin. God basically says, have no fear, but be afraid. And you may read that and you may think, well, that's not even fair. What's God trying to say there? And then you may be a little offended by that idea that people are afraid that it's going to kill them to come near to God. And sometimes what we do is we say, well, maybe in that sentence, it's two different words for fear. Well, it's not. It's the same word that's in verse 18. It's the same word that's in other places. The word is yare. It just means fear. God says, be afraid, but don't be afraid. And that's hard for us to grasp. So what that tells us is that there must be a type of fear that we're not to have when we approach God. But then there's also a type of fear that we are not to lack when we approach God. So as the people are seeing this, that's what they're trying to figure out. And we see that in their reaction is that they're far off. We'll look in just a minute at the idea of worship. Worship means coming near. It's the idea of drawing near to God. These people have backed away, and God says, you don't have to do that. Be afraid of all this, but I'm going to draw you near to me. God says, when I think about our relationship, and again, we'll talk about this more in just a second. God wants intimacy. God wants a close relationship with us. God wants us to rely on him. But what God does not want is carelessness. God does not want us to approach him flippantly. God does not want us to approach him in a casual manner. God says, I'm God. And in this scene at Mount Sinai, he shows the people that he's delivered them. But he's also the one that they should fear. And he tells them even why. He says, you fear me so that you don't sin. See, fear is a motivator, isn't it? You know, fear is why we drive carefully on snow and ice. Because we know we got to be careful. Fear is why we take medicine. Because you go to the doctor and the doctor says, you take this, you're going to die. So we say, okay, I'm going to take this. Fear is why we take gun safety classes. Fear is why Brock didn't let Avery drive to church this morning. I always pick on that poor kid. But see, fear is a motivator. But what just happened? Oh. Fear is also, what fear does for us with God is it motivates us to draw near to God, but to do it carefully. To understand that we don't do this casually. We don't approach God with a give or take type relationship. God says, you need to understand who I am and then draw near me. And God will draw us near to him. And that's the next idea. Is when we understand that we're to have this yare, this fear of God, what's so incredible is that God then says, come near to me and worship. That I will draw you near to myself. When we think about worship, I think we tend to think about how did I feel about worship? How did the singing encourage me? Was it good for me this morning? How was the sermon? Was it the regular guy or the backup guy or who was it? What we have to think about and what we should be thinking about is how did God feel about it? Was it the worship that God has asked for? Did I give God everything I have? Maybe the songs were all off key. Maybe the preacher was terrible. Maybe the crowd was small. Maybe it was hot. Maybe it was cold. How did God feel When we bring God our work, it needs to be done His way because it's for Him, right? We bring this to Him. And it's interesting when God tells the people, be afraid, but don't fear. Look what He says next in verse 22. Lord said to Moses, this is what you are to say to the Israelites. And listen to the way God phrases this. You have seen that I have spoken to you from heaven. The people saw that God spoke to them. He says, you saw the thunder, the lightning. You saw everything that I did. That's you hearing me. And the next thing He says is don't make idols of gold or silver. You saw me speak to you. You saw my power. You saw what I can do. So don't try and make something that looks like me. Don't try and make something for you to say, there's God. He says, you cannot do that. You can't create something that's me. Don't try and worship something that you can see because what you see in me is power. There's just this differentness about God. And again, our relationship with God should be intimate. Our worship of God should be intimate, but it should never be casual. And again, don't hear me talk about how we dress. I'm talking about how our hearts are. How is our approach to God? Do we think, I can't wait to worship God? Or do we think, I'll be there Sunday morning and then I'm not coming back because I did my job? That's what I'm talking about when we think about this heart toward God and worshiping God. And again, it's that whole idea of the casualness. I think sometimes, even in our worship, we sometimes forget the weight or the heaviness or the otherness, if you will, of who God is. We can't take God lightly. And we definitely can't take our approach to God lightly. We can't approach God however we want to, no matter what our culture says. We're in a rights-focused, entitled culture that says, I ought to be able to do what I want, go where I want, act how I want, and God ought to be happy with it. That's not how God is. God doesn't want you to check in with Him every now and then and say, hey, let's be friends. That's not how God works. God says, I want your worship. I want your life. And I want your wholeness. I want your hearts. So when we think about the fact that this worship, and we sometimes make it harder than it has to be, because when we think we approach God on His terms, we approach God His way. But what's great is we approach God through His provision. He provides for us. That's what He does with the people. Look here in verse 23. Or verse 24, after He said, don't make an idol. Verse 24, it says, make an earthen altar for me and sacrifice it on your burnt off, sacrifice on it your burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, your flocks and your herds. He says, here's what I want you to do. I don't want your gold and silver. I don't want the big production. I want you to get a pile of rocks. And I'm going to provide a way for you to draw near to me. It's not a big production. It's not a great big thing. He says, put some rocks. Don't even use a tool on the rocks. He says, just pile them up and place your offerings on there. And don't miss this. That God provides the revelation. He provides the plan. He provides the spokesman, the intercessor in Moses. But He also provides the way of atonement. Man, that is so New Testament. And it's modeled right here for them. That God provides the plan. God says, come worship me my way. You don't have to guess. You don't have to figure it out. He says, I'll show you what it is. When we think about that, it's amazing to think that God has condescended to tell us about Himself. That God has chosen an incredible act of grace and humility to tell us how to draw near to Him. He doesn't say, go figure it out, and maybe, you know, when you die and show up in heaven, I'll let you know whether you get in or not. He says, here's how to do it. And that's why Paul says in Romans 12, verse 1, that there's one more sacrifice you need. He says, you present your bodies as a living sacrifice. You become that final. Give your. What he's talking about is a complete giving in to God. and we give ourselves over to God. It's a lie of our culture. It's a lie from Satan that being completely given over to God leads to bondage or leads to some sort of slavery to God. It leads to blessings. That's what God even says at the end of verse 24. He says, I will come to you and bless you in every place. He says, worship me the way I tell you to worship me. Come to me the way I tell you to come to me. Draw near to me the way I tell you to draw near to me. You don't have to stand it far off anymore. God says, I've provided a way for you to come near to me. Now, remember, these people are standing there watching this crazy thing happen, and they're scared. And God says, you don't have to be afraid. Build an altar and come near, and I'll provide everything you need to come near to me. That's a summation of the Christian life right there. We need to fear God because of who he is. But because of who he is, we need to be willing to draw near to him. We find ourselves sometimes standing far off from God. Maybe it's out of humility. Maybe it is just out of fear because we know that we don't belong there. We know we have no right to be standing in the presence of God. But we also believe that our God is good. And we can take this example, we can take this scene, and we can take from it that, yes, God is fearful. God is to be feared. But he also is the one that says, come to me. Come near to me. You don't have to be afraid if you come to me my way. And we believe, like Hebrews 4:16 says, that we can approach the throne of grace with confidence because we know that although our God is a God to be feared, the same book writes about God being a God of vengeance, but we know that we can approach his throne with confidence because he will provide us mercy because he's a good God. A 20th century writer, C.S. Lewis, puts this in such a great, provides such a great illustration for this. If you're not familiar with the Narnia books, C.S. Lewis writes these series of books where these four siblings end up in this world. They go through a wardrobe, a closet, basically, and they end up in Narnia. And it's a magical land that has, you know, elves and talking animals and all kinds of stuff. But there is an image of this Aslan who is... this image of God, probably more specifically, this image of the redemptive work of Jesus. And as these kids realize that in order to get out of this place, to get back home, that they're going to have to meet with Aslan, they're a little bit scared. They don't know really what the deal is with this guy. And this conversation is with Lucy, the youngest of the Pevensey kids. There's Lucy and Edward and Susan and Peter. And bearing in mind, these are animals talking, so stay with this, but hear what she's saying here. This is the exchange with Mr. and Mrs. Beaver early in the story. She says, I'm worried about meeting this man Aslan. Aslan a man, says Mr. Beaver sternly. Certainly not. Aslan is a lion, the great lion. Oh, said Susan, I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion. That you will, dearie, and make no mistake, said Mrs. Beaver. If there's anyone who can appear before Aslan without their knees knocking, they're either braver than most or just silly. Then he isn't safe, said Lucy. Safe, said Mr. Beaver. Don't you hear what Mrs. Beaver tells you? Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe. But he's good. He's the king, I tell you. I'm longing to see him, said Peter. Even if I do feel frightened when it comes to the point. And C.S. Lewis goes on to say this when the kids actually meet Aslan. He says, people who have not been in Narnia sometimes think that a thing cannot be good and terrible at the same time. If the children had ever thought so, they were cured of it now, for when they tried to look at Aslan's face, they just caught a glimpse of the golden mane and the great, royal, solemn, overwhelming eyes, and they found that they couldn't look at him. And they went all trembly. But his voice was deep and rich and somehow took the fidgets out of them. And now they felt glad and quiet. And it didn't seem awkward to stand there and say nothing before him. That's a great image of who God is. See, our God is not safe. Our God is not our buddy. Our God is all-powerful. He's omniscient. He demands our respect, but he's good. And we know that. He's good. So he tells us, be afraid of me, fear me, but draw near to me. Now see, the only way to make God safe is by God making God safe. We can't make God safe by deciding that God is love, so he loves everybody. So I'm okay. We can't make God safe by saying, I'm a pretty good guy, I'm going to present myself to God the way I want to, and God will be good with that. The Bible does not allow that. God is made safe on his terms. And God provides a way for us to come to him. When we see his goodness, when we see this plan, when we see this offer, he says, reach out for me, draw near to me, and I'll be there. And the way that he makes this plan, the way he provides this for us, is through his son. God provides the revelation for how we need to get to Christ, to how we need to get into a relationship with him. And he provides the intercessor in Jesus himself, who brought us the message, who became even the sacrifice. So God even provides the atonement in his son Jesus, and he draws us to him. So if you're afraid of God this morning, good. You should be. But you should also know that he draws you near to him. You should also know that as you reach to him, he'll be there. Just reach to him his way. Come to him his way. Exodus 20:20, see that in that verse. Be afraid, but don't be afraid. This morning, God draws you near to him. As I mentioned early in this, remember this idea that after deliverance, there's expectations. We've been delivered. The price has been paid. Jesus has delivered us from sin, but now there's expectations. We come to God his way. You can do that this morning. If you want to know what that way is, even, we're going to stand in just a minute. Dana's going to lead us in a song of encouragement. Come up here and sit up here. We'll talk about it. God is drawing you to him. Don't be afraid of that. Embrace that, because God says, draw near to me and I'll draw near to you. If you're a Christian and you've drifted from God, he's drawing you back this morning. If you want us to pray with you, we can do that this morning. Whatever you need, let us know now while we stand together and sing.